Remember, the ECLS survey included direct interviews with the children's parents. So, a parent would have to sit knee to knee with a government researcher and admit to spanking his child. This would suggest that a parent who does so is either unenlightened or, more interestingly, congenitally honest. It may be that honesty is more important to good parenting than spanking is to bad parenting. This one matters. The child's parents are involved in the PTA, and doesn't matter. The child frequently watches television. A child whose parents are involved in the PTA tends to do well in school, which probably indicates that parents with a strong relationship to education get involved in the PTA, not that their PTA involvement somehow makes their children smarter. The ECLS data show no correlation, meanwhile, between a child's test scores and the amount of television he watches. Despite the conventional wisdom, watching television apparently does not turn a child's brain to mush. In Finland, whose education system has been ranked the world's best, most children do not begin school until age 7, but have often learned to read on their own by watching American television with Finnish subtitles. Nor, however, does using a computer at home turn a child into Einstein. The ECLS data show no correlation between computer use and school test scores. Now, for the final pair of factors. This one matters. The child has many books in his home. And this one doesn't matter. The child's parents read to him nearly every day. As noted earlier, a child with many books in his home has indeed been found to do well on school tests. But regularly reading to a child doesn't affect test scores. This would seem to present a riddle. It bounces us back to our original question. Just how much and in what ways do parents really matter? Let's start with the positive correlation. Books in the home equal higher test scores. Most people would look at this correlation and infer an obvious cause and effect relationship. To wit, a little boy named Isaiah has a lot of books at home. Isaiah does beautifully on his reading test at school. This must be because his mother or father regularly reads to him. But Isaiah's friend Emily, who also has a lot of books in her home, practically never touches them. She would rather dress up her brats or watch cartoons. And Emily tests just as well as Isaiah. Meanwhile, Isaiah and Emily's friend Ricky doesn't have any books at home. But Ricky goes to the library every day with his mother. Ricky is a reading fiend. And yet, he does worse on his school tests than either Emily or Isaiah. What are we to make of this? If reading books doesn't have an impact on early childhood test scores, could it be that the book's mere physical presence in the house makes the children smarter? Do books perform some kind of magical osmosis on a child's brain? If so, one might be tempted to simply deliver a truckload of books to every home that contains a preschooler. That, in fact, is what the governor of Illinois tried to do. In early 2004, Governor Rod Blagojevich announced a plan to mail one book a month to every child in Illinois from the time they were born until they entered kindergarten. The plan would cost $26 million a year, but, Blagojevich argued, this was a vital intervention in a state where 40% of third graders read below their grade level. When you own books and they're yours, he said, and they just come as part of your life, all of that will contribute to a sense that books should be a part of your life. So all children born in Illinois would end up with a 60-volume library by the time they entered school. Does this mean they would all perform better on their reading tests? Probably not. Although we may never know for sure, in the end, the Illinois legislature rejected the book plan. After all, the ECLS data doesn't say that books in the house cause high test scores. It says only that the two are correlated. So how should this correlation be interpreted? Here's a likely theory. Most parents who buy a lot of children's books tend to be smart and well-educated to begin with, and they pass on their smarts and work ethic to their kids. Or perhaps they care a great deal about education and about their children in general, which means that they create an environment that encourages and rewards learning. Such parents may believe, as fervently as the governor of Illinois believed, that every children's book is a talisman that leads to unfettered intelligence. but they are probably wrong. A book is in fact less a cause of intelligence than an indicator. So what does all this have to say about the importance of parents in general? Consider again the 8 ECLS factors that are correlated with school test scores, negatively or positively. The child has highly educated parents. The child's parents have high socioeconomic status. The child's mother was 30 or older at the time of her first child's birth. The child had low birth weight. The child's parents speak English in the home. The child is adopted. The child's parents are involved in the PTA. And the child has many books in his home. And now, again, the 8 factors that were not correlated. The child's family is intact. The child's parents recently moved into a better neighborhood. The child's mother didn't work between birth and kindergarten. The child attended Head Start. The child's parents regularly take him to museums. The child is regularly spanked. The child frequently watches television. And the child's parents read to him nearly every day. To overgeneralize a bit, the first list describes things that parents are. The second list describes things that parents do. Parents who are well-educated, successful, and healthy tend to have children who test well in school. But it doesn't seem to much matter whether a child is trotted off to museums or spanked or sent to Head Start or frequently read to or plopped in front of the television. For parents and parenting experts who are obsessed with child-rearing technique, this may be sobering news. The reality is that technique looks to be highly overrated. But this is not to say that parents don't matter. Plainly, they matter a great deal. Here is the conundrum. By the time most people pick up a parenting book, it's far too late. Most of the things that matter were decided long ago. Who you are, whom you married, what kind of life you lead. If you are smart, hardworking, well-educated, well-paid, and married to someone equally fortunate, then your children are more likely to succeed. Nor does it hurt, in all likelihood, to be honest, thoughtful, loving, and curious about the world. But it isn't so much a matter of what you do as a parent, it's who you are. In this regard, an overbearing parent is a lot like a political candidate who believes that money wins elections, whereas, in truth, all the money in the world can't get a candidate elected if the voters don't like him to start with. In a paper titled The Nature and Nurture of Economic Outcomes, the economist Bruce Sacerdote addressed the nature-nurture debate by taking a long-term quantitative look at the effects of parenting. He used 3 adoption studies, 2 American and 1 British, each of them containing in-depth data about the adopted children, their adoptive parents, and their biological parents. Sacerdote found that parents who adopt children are typically smarter, better educated, and more highly paid than the baby's biological parents. But the adoptive parents' advantages had little bearing on the child's school performances. As also seen in the ECLS data, adopted children test relatively poorly in school. Any influence the adoptive parents might exert is seemingly outweighed by the force of genetics. But, Sacerdote found, the parents were not powerless forever. By the time the adopted children became adults, they had veered sharply from the destiny that IQ alone might have predicted. Compared to similar children who were not put up for adoption, the adoptees were far more likely to attend college, to have a well-paid job, and to wait until they were out of their teens before getting married. It was the influence of the adoptive parents, Sacerdote concluded, that made the difference. From the New York Times Magazine, Levitt thinks he is onto something with a new paper about black names. He wanted to know if someone with a distinctly black name suffers an economic penalty. His answer, contrary to other recent research, is no. But now he has a bigger question. Is black culture a cause of racial inequality, or is it a consequence? For an economist, even for Levitt, this is new turf. Quantifying culture, he calls it. As a task, he finds it thorny, messy, perhaps impossible, and deeply tantalizing.